This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and looks at the bottom of a starling, which is currently stuck up Kieran's chimney. I think you'll be hearing more about that later. It promises to be an exciting one, this. I'm Kevin Day, and Chris Packham over there is Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, tell us what's going on, because there were certainly sound effects when we first checked in.
Yes, we've got a flue. We've got a chimney, a starling came down it on Saturday, and I managed to grab hold of him and escort him out of the house. But he's now decided to come down again, and every time I go, and it's one of those glass fronted fires, so it's a log burner, as you would expect, of course.
Of course, Kieran.
But he keeps legging it up the chimney, so I stick my arm up the hole, and I can't grab him.
Dear, oh dear, oh dear. And Finley's taken an interest, I gather.
Finley is fascinated, and he's giving him Paddington Bear style stares, as you can imagine. Yeah. But has not managed to join in the party as yet.
See, I don't know how to break this to you, Kieran, but you know starling's favourite food is the middle of strawberries.
No!
They love the bit in the middle of the strawberry, Kieran. So, no, of course they don't. I'm making it up. I just want you to feel bad still about hulling your strawberries. So that could well be it. They could have the scent of a hulled strawberry carries far on the breeze, Kieran. But let's hope that starling issue gets resolved. But it's something else for our listeners to take note of, and indeed for BAFTA to say goodbye for. It's Newsday, Kieran. We haven't got that many news stories, but they're all big. They're all big stories. The first one is from France, and it's a beautiful city. It's one of my favourite French cities, Bordeaux. But in what's been described by their owner as a brutal punishment, Kieran, they've been relegated to the French third division for various financial misdemeanours.
Yes, the French football authorities, they effectively conduct an audit of clubs in terms of their financial affairs, because they want clubs to reduce the chances of insolvency, which is something which is to be encouraged. Mm. And that they're unhappy with regards to what's happened at Bordeaux, who I think they're in for around about €40 million, which by the standards of some of our clubs, it does genuinely seem like chicken feed or starling feed. they thought that they were going to be in the French second tier, and even that's, we both remember Bordeaux as being, a pretty significant French club. The French football authorities have taken a harsher view, whether it's brutally harsh, I don't know, and relegated them to the third tier. So it's going to be a long way up. And, of course, if you do that, it makes your financial circumstances even worse. So it seems to be compounding what's already a challenging position for Bordeaux.
So this just came out of a regular routine administrative check. They weren't, grassed up, for want of a better word, or it hasn't been ongoing. It's just something that the French authorities do, and they noticed that things were wrong.
Yes, you have to you have to submit, in order to get your license in effect, you have to submit financial data, as is the case, to be fair, here in England, because both the EFL and the Premier League insist that their clubs submit the financial data in order to assess from an FFP or profitability and sustainability perspective, and this was flagged during the review of Bordeaux.
Speaking of FFP, Kieran, I notice this is not a subject we have on the agenda, but I note Swiss Ramble did a rather long thread, which I bailed out of about a third of the way through, about Palace's finance in the report, but we are well within FFP regulations. I was pleased to see that. And
yes, absolutely. I've some Palace fans have been in contact with me, and I've said, nothing to worry about. There is opportunity to spend money. Just because you've got an opportunity to spend money doesn't mean that you should. But the finances at Palace are very secure in my view as well. And I'd never argue with the governor.
Yeah, I did. And Kieran, as you know, my views on financial responsibility are different to yours. I feel, and I shall be emailing Steve Parrish to this effect, that if there's an opportunity to spend money, spend the money. There's a lot of players out there. Bung some cash at the problem. Yes, we're going to get you onto our five-year plan Palace pod as well, just to do a five-minute catch-up, which would be nice and reassuring for our fans. Now, Kieran, this next story is a big one. It's a surprise. I urge you, Kieran, to be very careful, because we have silver-tongued lawyers listening to this. And this person who's involved in this story is someone that you've taken against, Kieran. I think it's safe to say that historically you're against him. And during the live shows, you said some things that bordered on illegal, Kieran, I would think. But just trod the fine line between, you probably shouldn't have really said that, but the audience seemed to be laughing. and rather worryingly tweeting. Lawrence Bassini, I mean, this has come out of nowhere, Kieran. Lawrence Bassini appears to be taking over Birmingham City. And from what you've told us, both in public and private, I can't help thinking that's not particularly good news for Birmingham City.
Yes. Now, for people who are not familiar with Lawrence Bassini, he was declared bankrupt in 2007, for which he blamed his father. And he changed his name from Lawrence Bassini, Bazini, to Bassini, Bassini, because in his words, everybody needs a fresh start.
Indeed. It's not that much of a fresh start, but I think
it's not.
I think that the most cursory private detective would see through that little name change, but there you are. But he's right, everybody needs a change. He's quite right.
I'm just glad my Uncle Terry didn't do the same, because otherwise he would have needed a fresh start, I think, 14 times.
Indeed, he would have run out, although I think he was calling himself Uncle Telly. until the East End police saw through that rudimentary disguise as well.
He was declared bankrupt, and lots of people who declared bankrupt and go on to be successes. Take Donald Trump, for example.
just to be clear, Kieran, once you've cleared your bankruptcy, that doesn't stop you then being a club owner, does it?
Absolutely, yeah. And therefore, he was legally allowed to acquire Watford Football Club in 2011. He was involved in a couple of things, one of which is referred to as Safegate. And this is where he arrived at the premises and demanded to be given access to the safe, so therefore he could remove all of the cash from it. For reasons which have never publicly been explained, but privately we have discussed this, and yes, we will say no more about the matter, of course.
Yes, because please don't. Yeah.
His argument: it's my club, so therefore I'm entitled to do what I want. He also, when the club was sold, it was revealed that he had taken cash advances, and this is all in the public domain, so we can say this.
Yeah, yeah.
He had taken cash advances of £1.5 million. This was in respect of the transfer fee for the sale of Danny Graham, and also some EFL awards money. And these money, say £1.5 million, it was described in the accounts as the funds were never received by the club.
Huh.
And we've all tried to pay checks in, Kevin, haven't we? Yeah, we go in we try to pay it into the account, and it ends up going into another account. So, pure accident. I believe the club was not confident of recovering that money from Mr. Bassini. he was subsequently banned from football by the football authorities for a period of 3 years for financial impropriety. And during the course of the charges, One of the conclusions was that he practiced secrecy and deception.
So perhaps
he should be a spy.
Perhaps he's
in the wrong job.
Maybe he's changed his name. Maybe he could change his face just as easily. Where's the new money come from, Kieran? Do we know to buy Birmingham City? How much will the asking price be? I mean, is this a genuine takeover, Kieran?
Well, what we have seen is in the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, there has been an announcement yesterday, a confirmation that Oriental Rainbow Investments Limited, a club based in the British Virgin Islands that owns 21.6% of the club, has transferred ownership of those shares. Right. So what's being put forward is that Lawrence Bassini has bought those shares. Where that money is being funded from, we don't know. He doesn't appear to have huge resources because he was also declared bankrupt in 2014. And I'm getting all of this, by the way, from the magnificent Charlton dossier, which we're big fans on, and hats off to them.
Absolutely.
Does this mean that he's going to bid for the remaining 75% or the biggest shareholder who's got 75% of the shares? The simple answer is we don't know. That there's no indication as present, but certainly the vibes are that somebody, and we're assuming it is Mr. Bassini, is going to put in this full bid. How much is it going to be? I would estimate overall buying Birmingham probably in the region of 20 to 25 million. Does he have that money? We can't comment on that. We don't know. He might have made a fortune in crypto in the past few years. He might have won the lottery. If you take a look at the number of companies that he owns an art gallery company. He owns a chauffeur company. He owns a restaurant company. For all we know, these companies could be fantastically successful, and therefore the money generated from them could be used to buy Birmingham City Football Club. Alternatively, he could be being funded and be a front man for somebody else. We don't know that detail.
If he has invested his money in crypto, Kieran, he might be in trouble because, rather worryingly, you get news flashes come across the bottom of your laptop. Well, I do, and there's one from the BBC which simply says Bitcoin crashes again, cryptocurrency plunges. So that might be something we need to talk about on the next pod. But if he does take over, Kieran, we've discussed this a fair few times. I mean, the ground needs work, needs investment. The squad certainly needs investment. So whatever he pays for it, to make them successful or to certainly to try and get out of the championship the right way, is going to cost a lot of money. And again, history tells us that he's never really had that money to invest in the club, has he?
That's right, because he tried to take over Bolton when it was in a mess, and he claimed that he'd put in a bid, but there was lack of proof of funds. So this does seem a little bit strange, and you're absolutely right. There's two costs in relation to a football club. There's the money to buy it, and then there's the ongoing operational losses. And Birmingham have wages which are substantially higher than revenue. So he's walking into a loss-making club. So it's going to be a challenge for him. And Birmingham fans are fed up, as are the fans of many clubs. I wouldn't on the basis of history say that a twice bankrupt, somebody banned from football for practicing secrecy and deception and financial impropriety is necessarily a good fit. But I may be wrong.
You may be wrong, Kieran. And as you say, it's the charitable thing to do is to think that Mr. Bassini may be a reformed character. If there's some secrecy and mystery about that deal, Kieran, there's no mystery at all about the Everton story, which again has come out, well, it seems to me to have come out of the blue. It may be that you have more inside information, but Peter Kenyon is fronting on a consortium who have entered talks to try to buy Everton. Were Everton for sale? Was this something that was on the radar, Kieran? Because as I say, it didn't seem to be on mine.
Well, it wasn't on the radar explicitly, But if we just take a look at sort of the backstory in relation to Everton, they were acquired by Farhad Moshiri, who is the former business partner of Alisher Usmanov, the oligarch who is presently had his assets frozen by the UK government for alleged links to Putin. And Everton also suspended the relationship that they had with Usmanov's companies. So he had naming rights options for the new stadium. He had naming rights for Finch Farm, which is the training facilities. Another one of his companies was sponsoring the front of shirt deal for the women's team. So there has been a historic link there. Mr. Moshiri has put in around about £400 million of money. Now some people are putting two and two together in relation to the fact that Moshiri was effectively used to be Usmanov's accountant and work colleague, and saying, well, is that money coming from Usmanov rather than Moshiri? There is no evidence to support that. So we then had this story which came out. I think it was one of the guys in the Telegraph first revealed it in the last 48 hours, and it's US investors who are looking to buy into the Premier League. And now, what's attractive about Everton? Well, a club with fantastic history and heritage, a club in a city that everybody in the US has heard of. Liverpool punches above its weight in terms of a tourist destination. It is ridiculously popular. I'm privileged to work there. I mean, I absolutely love the place as a working environment. It's got an airport. All of these things are pluses. And as we've said before, there's an increase in appeal for the Premier League because the pound's weak at present, which makes deals cheaper. So Peter Kenyon is the former chief executive of Manchester United. He's the former chief executive at Chelsea. So he is familiar with the Premier League. He also was involved, in theory, in some form of bid for Newcastle from Mike Ashley. Yeah. Not sure how far that ever got. So that's where we are. We're being told that the asking price is £500 million. Again, my gut reaction is that seems a bit high. Share prices are not good at present. Although, if you're buying a company, you can detach from individual share prices. People will say, well, hold on, Chelsea's just gone for 2.5 billion. So is 500 million for Everton a reasonable price? Well, you've got to factor in is that once you bought the club, you then have to pay for the new stadium, substantial investment also as far as on-field affairs. And I would say that Everton's sort of more aligned with Newcastle. And Newcastle went for 300 million last November. So I think my gut reaction is that 500 million looks a high price. But paying over the odds for things is part of business. So that's where we are at present.
But also, Kieran, as you hinted at there, and I was about to ask you, if Birmingham City needs investment, then Everton does, but on a much bigger scale. Like you said, the stadium has to be paid for. The squad certainly needs heavy investment, just logically, as they just finished in a relegation battle. It looks like Richarlison is on his way to Spurs. I mean, that squad's going to need a lot of money spent on it if they're going to compete at the other end of that table. Plus, there are ongoing rumours of FFP problems coming up because we know they were hugely overspent. So it's hard to say at the moment that £500 million seems even more expensive given all the other money that's going to have to be spent to resolve some of Everton's problems.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And I think one of the reports in the papers did say that the bid was effectively contingent upon Everton having no FFP deductions, fines and so on. My understanding with regards to that is it's gone a bit quiet on that particular score. Now, being quiet could mean that our silver-tongued friends are working behind the scenes and busy exchanging documents between each other. So just because it's not being discussed publicly doesn't mean that things aren't taking place behind the scenes. Certainly, the noises I've heard from Everton is that they maintain that they are within the limits. They've been working in conjunction with the Premier League, and they feel that there is no case to answer with regards to exceeding FFP limits, and that's the stance they say. And with regards to the takeover, again, the noises I got, and I hear noises, and it's not just Starlings down the chimney. Was the noises I was getting was, well, no comment. Now, there's a big difference between no comment and no. Is somebody trying to buy you? No comment. Draw your own conclusions.
Yeah. Well, also there's another issue, because as far as we know, the ongoing legal action from Burnley hasn't been dropped, so that's another thing. Talking of Starlings, Kieran, it has gone very quiet. Can you just check that Finley's not licking his lips? Because we don't want him to get a taste for Starling as well as Wonky Chomps,
Kieran. Absolutely.
To no one's surprise, it's now officially, 100% definitely, certainly official, that Chris Kirchner has pulled out of the deal to buy Derby County. Does that change anything at all, Kieran, the fact that it's now official and that all this slightly optimistic week of silence when some people saying, well, maybe that means it is going through, and when you were adamant it wasn't, has that changed anything?
Nothing critical. The administrators have now said we are talking to other parties, but it does make you wonder why they put all of their eggs in the Chris Kirchner basket.
Yeah.
When he was involved, he was involved in trying to acquire Derby pre-Christmas, and he pulled out. He was involved in a bid for Preston, and he pulled out. I've not heard about so many pull out since when I did my confirmation. We all remember those days. Yeah, when we're getting the advice from the priest, and when you're adult, this is what you got to do.
Can I just interrupt you there? Because when I think I've shared this, I went to a Catholic grammar school, a boys' school, and we had two Catholic girls' schools quite near us, one of which had a more saintly reputation than the other, shall we say. One was called Lower Trait, one was called Notre Dame. And this is 100% true. In assembly, the headmaster told us at the age of 12 that we should practice on the girls from Notre Dame, but try and marry one from Lower Trait. which was to a group of 12-year-olds was baffling advice. there's a lot of things Ali blames on the fact that I went to an all-boys school, but that's for a different pod. So yes, Kieran, the Quantum have come in for even more grief, haven't they? I mean, you mentioned Portsmouth, and that led to a lot of Portsmouth fans venting historical spleen at them. It's going to be interesting to see what happens after this in terms of Quantum being asked to administer another club, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, and you've got to say, well, who chooses the administrators?
Yeah.
Oh, it was Mel Morris.
Yeah.
Quantumar have been very vocal in criticising an awful lot of people connected with the administration, including Chris Kirchner, including the fans, the EFL, Middlesbrough, Wickham. But they've been completely silent with regard to the man who put Derby into this financial position, who ran up a £28 million tax bill, who sold the stadium to himself, and so on. And it does seem a bit strange. If you look up, if you Google Andrew Andronico, who is one of the administrators from Quantumar, severely reprimanded by his own body for historic activity. So he's not looking great. Now, I used to work in that industry myself. I worked for a professional organization. It's normally fairly unusual, and I'm not just trying to score cheap points here. It's normally fairly unusual in professional bodies for people to get reprimands and so on, because things tend to take place behind closed doors. It, of course, and also, as Uncle Terry says, no one likes a grass.
Yeah.
Um, So it doesn't reflect overly well. And also, people are allowed to make mistakes and move on, as the Prime Minister keeps reminding us. things haven't been great because I think the EFL were planning to go to Pride Park because they wanted to take more of an oversight as to what happened, and they were due to arrive at Pride Park, but mysteriously somebody leaked this to the newspapers or a particular newspaper, a particular journalist, and that was then put out, which meant that the EFL decided, well, you know, it's not worth our while. The last thing that we need, what we need is calm hands, cool heads. Last thing we need is that there'll be a media scrum because people will be wanting to see somebody from the EFL arrive. And also, if it goes out Derby fans are understandably angry and anxious as to what's happened, the last thing you want is a group of fans to turn up to say, because there is a viewpoint expressed by the Derby fans that the EFL is responsible for the state of the club at present. My own view is that is a misunderstanding what's gone on, different people, different opinions.
You mentioned, Kieran, as somebody who worked in that industry, you said it's unusual for an administrator to put all their eggs in one basket. So would best practice normally be then that you would have two or three plates spinning at the same time, that you talk to everybody who's interested, and then you whittle it down to two and then maybe one? Because, as you say, right from way back in sort of early December, it's been Chris Kirchner and no other, isn't it? When we know for a fact that Mike Ashley, for example, seems to be on the sidelines and is waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue has been is that they did give Chris Kirchner exclusivity, and you always do that at a period of time. But what I would have, I'm not telling you about the jobs. What you would have expected them to do was to take a significant fee, a significant deposit at that stake.
Yeah,
at that time, because that reduces downside risk. You know, if he had to go and put down a £5 million non-refundable deposit for exclusivity, and then when you got the deadline, the thing about a deadline is that they're supposed to be deadlines, not deadlines extended and extended and extended.
Yeah.
So all of this, especially given his past history, especially if you do any form of digging into his background, there are so many red flags that you want to make it financially negative for him if he does pull out at this stage. So therefore, you insist on a full deposit, or you say, as we sometimes, I've seen other deals. It's first across the line. Here's the price. Whoever gets the paperwork signed off by the quickest gets the club. So I think there were alternatives. I'm not saying they had an easy job. It also wasn't the most difficult of jobs. It was certainly made more difficult by Morris selling the stadium to himself because it reduced the assets that they could sell.
Just one more thing on Derby, Kieran, and I pray for the day when we'll be able to say that officially, and it will be just one more thing on Derby. Did Chris Kirchner give any reason for officially pulling out? We know, because you told us, that his American interests are struggling financially, but has he just said, I'm not buying Derby County anymore? Has he expressed disappointment? Has he said, I've been obstructed, or I don't like the price, anything at all?
It was effectively, it was difficulties in being able to transfer funds.
Oh, so yes.
But if it is that difficult, why did Todd Bowley manage it in Chelsea? And why have Walsall's owners managed it as well?
Yeah.
So there does appear to be an inconsistency in his statement, that doesn't look too clever.
Father's Day is just around the corner, and our friends at Manscaped are here to ensure all the father figures out there are looking daddy material this June. Manscaped's Performance Package 4.0, which includes their signature Lawnmower 4.0, is the perfect bundle to tackle any and all old man hair from head to toe. This right here, my friends, is no dad joke. Treat him or yourself and join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code priceoffootball at manscaped.com. Trust me, his dad bod will thank you.
And look, folks, we appreciate that for many of us, Father's Day can be a sensitive day. Both myself, Kevin, and producer Guy, we've lost our old man. So this isn't an insult to anybody out there listening. But if you do fancy going for this, Manscaped, it's designed with dads in mind. And the Performance Package 4.0 is here just in time for your old man's special day.
So get 20% off and free shipping with the code priceoffootball at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code priceoffootball. Shake what your mama gave you? Nah, shake what your daddy gave you.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by CarMax. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because CarMax believes you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car they sell has CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive. CarMax. The way car buying should be. Start shopping now at CarMax.com.
There are some interesting things going on, Kieran, with shirt sponsors at the minute. Everton, the aforementioned, Newcastle and Plymouth. And some of these are a bit more, in inverted commas, interesting than others, for want of a better word.
Yeah, I can only describe this as the moral maze when it comes to shirt sponsorship. And you know, people will get upset about perhaps some of the stuff we're about to talk about. Let's take a look at these clubs. First of all, let's start with Newcastle United. Newcastle United are presently got shirt sponsorship arrangement with Fun 88, which is is an Asian based South Asian based online gambling company. Now, there have been some rumours that that deal was going to be cancelled because it was inconsistent with the position of gambling in Saudi Arabia, and then because PIF own 80% of Newcastle, it would therefore make more sense to have a shirt sponsor who, you know, if, for example, if Newcastle go on a pre-season tour of Saudi, which could be very lucrative, there could be promoters in Saudi who are willing to pay Newcastle a substantial fee, for example, for them to play in a pre-season tournament there. So there was that story doing the rounds, and then Newcastle did reveal their shirt, and it does have Fun 88 on the front of it, and the deal still has time to expire. Could that deal be ripped up? Yes, it could. We've seen sponsorship deals be ripped up before. So that's Newcastle, and people say, well, perhaps we could applaud this because if it's a non-gambling sponsor, that's a positive. The critics of Newcastle, and there's always positives and negatives, the critics of Newcastle will say, well, this is just part of a broader sports washing issue from the Saudi owners. So,
before we move on from Newcastle, because I'm intrigued by this, because it was at least two of the tabloids reported this cancellation as a done deal. They said it's been pulled, the contract's been pulled, but they implied it was Newcastle getting in first, basically, because Premier League clubs won't be allowed gambling sponsors from the season after the one that's happening. So that seemed to be their angle on the story. So, but now what you're saying is that they haven't cancelled it, but if they were to do so, it would be because of Saudi Arabian rules on gambling.
Well, they've revealed a new kit for next season, which has Fun 88 on the front of it.
Okay, right.
In terms of the gambling ban, again, I'm picking up vibes.
Right.
And I'm picking up vibes that there will not be a compulsory ban, but that the government would prefer that the Premier League has a voluntary ban on front of shirt gambling sponsorship. So we don't know whether it's going to go as far as legislation. The government will be taking its time to sort out the white paper with regards to this, and then of course there's opportunity for reflection. The gambling industry, as we know, is a very wealthy industry and has been lobbying the government, which is the nature of a parliamentary democracy.
So Everton, then, what's happening with their sponsor?
Well, Everton were sponsored by Cazoo, the online car retailer, and cars produce, they produce fumes, they contribute towards global warming, they're environmentally not friendly. But Everton have announced a new sponsor with a gambling company.
Oh.
Now, the way that the deal was presented, it's the biggest deal outside of the Big Six. It's a record deal for Everton. The club has a fiduciary duty to, as an organisation, to maximise earnings.
Yeah.
I absolutely understand that. Financial fair play is challenging, and this will help them in terms of financial fair play. Reading this, it did appear, and perhaps I'm misinterpreting here, that the announcement was made more in sorrow than joy. But it is going against the tide of clubs. You've done it at Palace. We've seen it at a few other clubs as well, where they're trying to move away from gambling. If you then take a look at this particular gambling company, which did sponsor Watford for 21-22, it doesn't look great.
Right.
First of all, it's based in Curacao. Now, Curacao is one of those places where you think, well, I need to get Google Maps out here to work out where it is. Yeah, I think it's is it part of the Netherlands Antilles? It's not local. Then, as far as the gambling license is concerned, it's based in the Isle of Man. Now, there are many of what we refer to as white label gambling companies, which are effectively, they're not interested in generating gambling receipts from the UK particularly. They're looking for overseas markets. So therefore, they will often get a license based. So based in the Isle of Man, not quite as transparent, why there and not the UK?
Yeah.
What type of gambling company is it? Is it? It's a crypto casino. Okay. So, my reservations with regards to things like this are, and perhaps I'm completely wrong here. You and I, we both place the occasional bet, and we will do that normally on a sport, and we will normally do that because the odds. Are actually quite low. So the margins are actually quite tight for bookmakers because there's places such as gambling comparison sites, and therefore you can try to find the best odds. And as a consequence, the margins on sports betting aren't particularly great. They still make money. The margins on casinos are much, much higher because the slots payouts are actually quite low. The online card games, the house is always geared up to wins. If you think about a roulette wheel, again, you've got your zero, you've got your double zeros. The house is always geared to win with regards to that. So we're dealing with an online casino where the odds are far more stacked in the face of the organization, and then I did, again, some more background work with regards to stake.com. And I think it's fair to say that the reviews were not positive. So, you know, all organizations, doesn't matter what industry you're in, you know, there is the opportunity to review. And stake.com, in my opinion, didn't come out of this particularly well. And I think there's an issue. I said before, I am so proud to work in the city of Liverpool.
Yeah.
But what I have noticed is that there is one thing which unites everybody in Liverpool, regardless of your political beliefs, regardless of where you stand on Brexit, regardless of which football team you support, is a loathing for a particular national newspaper.
Yeah.
Now, if we go back to what the club said, if we have a fiduciary duty to take the highest bid, regardless of source, what if that national newspaper, and I'm not even going to name it, what if that national newspaper came in with a bid? Would we therefore be obliged to take that money as well? And this is where I think, this is why I say it is the moral maze
of
shirt sponsorship. And, you know, I know that every single Everton fan would simply turn around and say that we are not prepared to accept that.
Yeah.
But if the club is going to take this standpoint, then it puts them in a genuinely awkward position.
Yeah.
So that's Everton.
Beautiful place, the Isle of Man, but bordering on the sinister, I think, Kieran. I don't know if you've been there. Last time I was there.
I've taught there, yes.
Have you? Ah, right, okay.
Yes.
Last time I was there was with four other lads from London, not a stag do, I hasten to add. And we're all of the opinion that every corner we turned was going to have a giant burning straw effigy of some sort. It's a bit like time travel. It's a bit like if you want to know what England was like in the 1950s, I suggest you go to the Isle of Man. Now, Plymouth. Break this to me gently, Kieran, because if this is Plymouth losing Ginsters from the front of their shirts, that's going to be like the Ravens leaving the Tower of London. Plymouth have to have Ginsters on the front of their shirts, Kieran, please.
Right. Prepare to be disappointed.
Oh, that didn't sound good.
Disappointed, but very proud of Ginsters.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So what we are having with Plymouth Argyle, and I think this is a fantastic move. I think it's indicative of the way that Simon Hallett is running Plymouth as a community club, is that the Ginsters have agreed to not put their name on the front of shirts instead.
Oh.
And what we're going to have is Project 35. And what Project 35 represents, and this is something which is shameful. You know, we are one of the wealthiest overall nations in the world.
Yeah.
That in some wards in the city of Plymouth, 35% of children are in food poverty.
Jesus.
And this is highlighting that particular feature. So what Ginsters have said is that instead of having our name on the front of shirts, we are going to fund this. We are going to provide 100,000 free lunches for kids in the city of Plymouth. We're going to highlight the rise in food poverty, and which has of course been accelerated. And there's going to be food appeals put out at home matches, regular collections. There's going to be hampers for kids as well for the holidays. This is very much a community project. I think it's a fantastic piece of action. You know, Plymouth aren't going to benefit financially. It is going to be this effectively, this project, this charity. And if I was a Plymouth fan, I'd be ridiculously proud of my club. And I know we do get some criticism. I read the reviews on Apple Podcasts, and we get accused of being left wing. Left wing people, and we should stick to football. Well, okay, we are sticking to football. Plymouth have done really well. Food poverty is a national shame, and it needs to be addressed.
Well said, quite right. Don't read reviews, Kieran. Madness lies that way. Just look at the stars and come up with funny names for people that could present the pod instead of us. I'm fairly sure that Guy has worded this next news story for a reason. As it says here, Manchester United's share price has taken a bit of a beating over the last few months. And from what I understand, Kieran, Some people at Manchester United would like to give you a bit of a beating for over the last few hours. They're not happy with you, Kieran, are they, I believe?
No, they're not. And all I'm doing, I'm just putting out facts.
You're just telling the truth. You're just putting the truth out there, people, aren't you?
Now, look, global economic crisis, share prices are falling, Manchester United share price is falling as well. That, and I've said that.
Yeah.
What concerns me is that Manchester United share price is now more than 20% lower than it was when the club first went to the stock market, when it was brought to the market by the Glazer family.
Yeah.
And part of the reason for that is that they say, well, Manchester United's part of the entertainment industry. They're trying to market it as a quasi-tech stock. Because you know they're gathering, you know, you think about the success of the Manchester United app and they're gathering all the data in respect of fans and so on. So yeah, there is no doubt that the global economic crisis has driven down share prices over the course of the last 6 months or so. But I'm looking at a period of 10 years. Now, over that period of 10 years, all of the stock markets have increased in value. So what we have here is Manchester United underperforming significantly against the rest of the market. So then you have to ask yourself, let's go back to, and I don't want to turn this into a lecture, but you know, what ultimately determines share price? First of all, there's the industry that you're in. So you know, it doesn't matter who would be in charge of Blockbuster. Blockbuster would have been turned to nothing. Yeah, but yeah. Blockbuster took a crash because technology moved on. So is that the case in respect of Manchester United? In my opinion, no. I think Manchester United have got a fantastic. Yeah, they've got a global brand. They've got a global fan base and all of this. So can we put it down to the nature of the product? No. Then ultimately, you would say, well, it comes down to the quality of decision making and the quality of senior management, because Tesla is a success because, and he might be a complete hat stand, but Elon Musk is a man who has a belief in a product. If you think about Apple, it was driven by Steve Jobs. Now, read Steve Jobs' biography, as I have done. He wasn't a very pleasant man, but he had a vision for the company.
Yeah,
can we therefore say that Manchester United have performed well in terms of their decision-making over the course of the last decade? They've not won the Premier League since 2013. They have the most expensive squad, or pretty close to the most expensive squad in the Premier League. So the money has been spent. The money has been made available. Has it been spent well? You know, this isn't a football show, but Manchester United finishing sixth. Manchester United getting stuffed by both Brighton and Palace at the end of last season, where we both thought, well, yeah, we've beaten them, but they actually got away. You know, they should have been beaten, but you know, much more severely. We love our clubs, but we also know we're Brighton and Palace. They're Manchester United. That shouldn't be happening. So I think what's happened here is that the markets are saying, in order to fix Manchester United, it's going to be very expensive. And therefore, that money is going to increase the losses of the company. And that reflects in terms of the share price as well as global blah, blah, blah.
It's one thing to say it's going to be expensive to fix. We know that. Any other company, if the price of shares has gone down by so much, what would happen to the leaders of that company? I mean, you presume there'd be some kind of rebellion or whatever. I don't know how these things work, but it seems interesting that the Glazers continue to go on their merry way, even though the share price is going down and down.
Yeah, and the reason for a contributory factor to this is that there are two types of share at Manchester United. There is one share. I might get these the wrong way around, but there are the A shares, which are all owned by the Glazers, and they carry 10 votes each. And then there are the B shares, which are owned by individual shareholders, and they only carry one vote each. So it's impossible, really, to put up any significant dissent as a shareholder group, because of the way that those two shareholdings work. So the Glazers, I think, between them own 93% of the votes of Manchester United.
Right.
So you might as well, you know, say, well, there's no point in bothering because, you know, turkeys don't vote for Christmas.
Yeah, okay. The EFL, Kieran, has advised us of a bunch of new rules, including one that's designed to help colourblind fans, which, of course, is good for you and the 8% of the population that are also colourblind. But another one to tighten up the owners and directors test, which is also good for you, Kieran, but long overdue.
Yes, yeah. And first of all, thanks to Trevor East, who is a friend of ours, who is he's put this forward. Yeah, he's a director. He's a director of Plymouth, in fact.
Yes, indeed.
I think he listened to the podcast and also Catherine at Colour Blindness Awareness, because she's put together such a persuasive case for addressing what is a very simple problem to solve.
Yeah.
I was a bit disappointed in some of the reporting that we've seen in the papers, where it said that home teams might, you know, the team playing at home might have to change its shirt. That wasn't the intention of the rule. The intention was to ensure that there is no colour clashes. Now,
yeah.
All this would take, you would think, is a phone call between the two clubs before each match to say to the away team, have you chosen a kit which is definitely going to not be a colour clash? And that's there are ways of doing that, because I think Catherine and some of her associates are now providing colourblind filters. So therefore you see the world through the eyes of a colourblind person.
Oh, wow.
And therefore if you're playing in green and the opponents are playing in red and it looks identical, you say, right, well, we need to go and change the away kit. And remember, there are three away kits.
Yeah.
If you've got three away kits which are all similar, then that goes against the purpose of shirts in the first place.
Yeah.
Why do we have football shirts for the home team and away team? It's to distinguish the players. It's to make the job easier.
Yeah.
So you know, fair play to you know, big thanks to Trevor East for sort of pushing on this, and Catherine, I think they've made amazing progress, and fair play to the people at the EFL for voting this through as well. With regard to the other rules in terms of tightening up the owners and directors test, and I think this again is very progressive. The EFL are effectively saying that if you are planning on transferring shares between individuals, you have got to give us notice, and we have got to approve those in advance. So this is to stop effective fait accomplis with regard to share transfers. Now, where this would stand in relation to Birmingham City, you know, we don't know, because I think the rules come into play, I think it's from the 1st of July,
right.
And clearly this transaction has taken place in June. So I think this is progressive. It does allow the EFL a little bit more opportunity to do some more vetting of people building up stakes in clubs, and that's got to be welcomed, because there are too many examples of poor governance in the game, and this is a way of addressing that issue.
Mm. We do, Kieran, technically have one story left, but mindful of the criticism that you say we have, that this is not a football pod, and it's not really related to finance, I think possibly we should hold it over for another pod also, because I'm still really sulky about it. And if I see Arsene Wenger, I shall tell him, because based on his recommendations, it looks like the throw-in could be on its way out of the game. I'm just do some gardening, Arsene, basically. Stop interfering with a game that's been working fine as it is for quite some time. Yeah, it's all to do with time-wasting because we're not getting our blood. But it's also to do with the fact that he's still sulking that Stoke kept beating them because they threw the ball. There's more than one ways to win a football game than tippy-tapping your way 100 yards up the pitch. As you can see, Kieran, I'm in no psychological state to discuss this logically. So let's hold it over till someone inevitably sends a question in. thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to join them and make a small monthly contribution to the pod, that's very kind of you, and you can do so by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, we have our questions pod on Monday, then email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. That's questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, Thank you for everybody at Patreon who is supporting the show. We genuinely appreciate it, and we know that times are tight, so giving us financial support, where if we're honest, you're not getting much extra in return, because we want this show to be free. That's always been our philosophy. But so to do that on a voluntary basis is incredibly generous. And remember, you can do that for as little as a pound a month. If you want to support the show in another way, the way that you can do that is by going on to your app that you use to listen to podcasts and giving us a review. And ideally, if you can give us 5 stars, that would be absolutely fantastic. We do appreciate it. And it helps us. It helps us in the charts. It helps us to book guests, because they tend to look at these things. In the ratings, we're doing okay. It doesn't apparently matter what you say as far as the narrative of your review is concerned. Kevin and I, we both like history. We've just been talking about food poverty. So perhaps you could say you would rather the show was presented by Marie Antoinette and Anne Boleyn to add a little bit of culture and then a little bit of nuance to the show and probably improve it as well.
Don't start me on Anne Boleyn. You know my views on Anne Boleyn. And Marie Antoinette never actually said let them eat cake, to her credit. Apparently she was a very nice woman. And talking of guests, Kieran, I don't know if we should break this news, as I'm more excited about the guest we have next week than I think any other guest we've ever had. Would you like, without mentioning a name, Kieran, would you like to mention what product our guest is on talking about?
Yes. I think it's in 2 weeks, and we've got somebody from the world of football pies.
I can't believe it's taken us this long to actually discuss the economics of pie production and supply at a football ground. But I really genuinely can't wait. No sign of any samples yet, I noticed, Kieran. So beer companies seem more keen to send us stuff than pie companies. But yeah, there's still 2 weeks to go. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The price of football. Price of football.